wasn't real. That didn't happen. Which is why it felt less like a dream and more like the setup for a nightmare, because I didn't know how this all ended yet, did I? I felt my hands clench on the thick muscles of Luis Cesar's shoulders and wanted... what, exactly? Reassurance? Life didn't give reassurance. You paid your money, and you took your chances, and most of the time, you lost. Like I was going to do, because I didn't deserve... I'm frightened, too, Luis Cesar said suddenly. I blinked, torn out of my mental battle by whatever the hell that was. What?
I, too, am afraid, he repeated.
I just stared at him. His eyes met mine, hedged by lashes that couldn't decide what color they wanted to be, like his hair. At the moment, both were reddish gold, gilded by a stray beam from outside making it into our little cave. And the eyes themselves were open and honest and vividly blue, because the damned man didn't know you weren't supposed to say things like that. And then I realized the implication. I'm not afraid.
I think you are.
Of what?
Of this.
The hands on my thighs clenched, and I scowled at him. I fooled around before.
I'm not talking about that.
The disturbing gaze didn't waver.
I feel it too. I've never been in love.
Stop it!
Why? It's true. I'm in love, and it terrifies me.
Then why are you here? It came out harsher than I'd intended, but he didn't flinch.
Because you're here.
I just stared at him some more. What the hell do you say to that?
I don't know how to do this, he told me. I never had the chance to find out. I spent my youth trying to survive. When I finally managed to work my way into a better situation, a stable one, for the first time, Christine.
Yeah, irony of ironies, the best catch on the planet had ended up tied to a crazy bitch named Christine, who was even a worse romantic prospect than me. But she'd gotten her claws into him deep, not because he loved her, but because he'd hurt her. To be more exact, she'd been injured. He had tried to change her into a vampire to save her life, and it hadn't worked. She had ended up as something called a revenant, a masterless monster that resulted sometimes when a change went wrong and was supposed to be put down immediately. But of course he hadn't put her down. Instead, he'd kept her around, like a living penance. And I strongly suspected, because he'd been abandoned by his own sire, the vampire father who'd left him just as his human parents had done, and he couldn't bring himself to do the same to anyone else. But Christine wasn't a vampire, and she was crazy. And it had all ended about as you'd expect.
I made many mistakes, he told me quietly. For a long time, I thought I would end up paying for them forever. Maybe that is why, lately, everything seems so unreal. She is gone, and you are here. And I never thought...
He stopped, and his eyes clenched again.
I never thought I would have this. So I am afraid.
That threw me some more, because it had never occurred to me that Luis Cesar, of all people, felt anything but confident. He sure as hell never acted anything but confident, or looked it. Until now, when there was something in his face I didn't want to acknowledge, especially not with the sword of Damocles hanging over my head. You should be, I told him harshly. I could hurt you. She could hurt you. Or worse.
And what if she does?
What?
Or what if I die in the war? Or what if you do? Will being deprived of love for whatever time Le Bon Dieu gives us help in some way?
I scowled at him, because he still wasn't getting this.
If you're not around Dorina, maybe you won't die at all.
And if I am not with you, I will not live at all, not as I have these past months.
I stared at him.
There are 1,000 ways to die, he told me quietly. There are so few to really live. I would gladly risk the former for the latter, and it is my choice, is it not? To risk whatever I must, my heart, my body, my soul, in order to be with you. Is that not what love is?
I stared at him some more, and not just because he was doing it again, saying outrageous things that you weren't even supposed to let yourself think, but because, I don't know what it is. I was never supposed to be asked that question. Domfiers were nature's loners, the perfect killing machines with no friends, no lovers, and no family. And for a long time, that's all I'd been. My own father had rarely talked to me, and my mother had died before I was old enough to remember, so what did I know about family? But I had wanted one anyway. Desperately, terribly, no matter how many times I told myself that I couldn't have it, to stop whining and get on with things, and so I had. For a very long time, I had. And just when I got used to that, when I finally started to accept it, when I was actually kind of okay with it, fate, or fortune, or the game master up there with a whacked-out sense of humor decided to send me a blue-eyed Disney prince with his heart on his sleeve and words on his lips that I had never, ever expected to have said to me, and I had no idea what to do with him. None at all.
Then let me tell you,
he said, pulling me closer so he could murmur in my ear.
Love is sending someone away, because you would rather hurt than hurt them. Love is fighting beside them, bleeding along with them, and putting their well-being above your own. Love is trembling at their touch so much that you do not notice that they are trembling at yours.
I'm not trembling.
I am,
he whispered, and kissed me. I kissed him back, because I didn't know what else to do. I never had. From the first time I met him, the only way I'd ever found to deal with him was, well, this. And it worked pretty well, because he immediately deepened the kiss, one hand sliding under my hair, one remaining on my thigh, gliding up and down the silky fabric. Okay, make that really, really well. And God, this wasn't helping, I thought, biting his lower lip. I was supposed to be pushing him away, not trying to climb down his throat. Then he groaned and did that thing, that slide his hands down my back to grip my ass thing, and what the hell, this bite wasn't going anywhere anyway.
I never felt fear like when I saw you fall, he murmured, when I paused for breath, and didn't know if I would be fast enough to reach you.
It doesn't matter now.
It does.
He caught my hand, which had gone exploring under that sweater.
I know you don't want me here tonight. I knew before I came.
Okay. I started working on the jeans, which wasn't as easy as you'd think left-handed.
You've been independent for so long, it's all you know. I was like that too. I understand.
Great. Good to know. The jeans were too tight, especially with him sitting down, and then there was the problem of the damned jumpsuit.
Can you understand why I couldn't not come?
Can you just shut up and fuck me? I gritted out, wishing Radu had sent a dress. Some short little thing that would be easier to...
Screw it.
The jumpsuit ended up on the floor, and I ended up back on his lap, and oh yeah, that was better. That was perfect. Damn, I loved the theater. Hard hands gripped me, moving over me while also trying to get him out of his own clothes, which wasn't easy in a chair that wasn't built for two and also had a squeaky spring somewhere inside that was advertising the pre-show, not that anybody could see,
We were in the top row of boxes, so pretty high up, and the front of the box was fairly tall, and there were no seats on the left of us where the curtain remained open. Just the stage where some musicians were warming up, but they were in the pit far below.
Squeak, squeak, squeak.
Luis Cesar growled something profane. I laughed, and he rolled us onto the floor.
And okay, yeah, better, especially since I'd ended up on top. There was plenty of room in front of the first row of chairs. The plush carpet looked clean, and the dim light filtering in from the theater was just enough to see by. 10-10 would fuck again, I thought, and pulled his sweater off. And stopped halfway, because he'd just caught something in his mouth. In fairness, it had been swinging in his face, so... Calloused hands slid up my back, pulling me down as he started to suck, sending shivers throughout my body. I didn't have the sweater all the way off. It still trapped his arms, which was nice, which was perfect, I decided.
You can't get away now, I told him.
I don't recall trying.
Don't talk with your mouth full. Mental communication was new to me, mental laughter even more so, and strangely intimate, because I couldn't usually do it with anyone but him, and because it was still echoing in my head when he slid into me. He was hot and hard and long and thick and gah! I came almost immediately, vibrating before he even started thrusting, with little explosions going off behind my eyes, like my body had been waiting for this forever, like our whole relationship had been foreplay. Which was how it felt every time, but something about the trapped vamp and the cozy darkness and the need to be silent and the perfect rhythm that we fell into despite the fact that he couldn't use his hands. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. His patience broke barely a minute later, and he rolled me over, cursing and fighting with the damned sweater while I laughed and laughed, and while the chair we'd banged into again squeaked and squeaked, and while the musicians below, who had started playing for real now, probably started wondering which of them was making that weird noise. I bit his shoulder, because it was that or give them a screaming demonstration. And then Luis Cesar stopped and stared around.
What?
I asked breathlessly.
What is it?
He swallowed.
We usually get to this point, and your roommate shows up. I believe I've developed a complex.
Well, Claire's not here.
I moved sinuously underneath him and felt him shudder.
We should come to the theater more often.
Or you could move in with me, and we could do this in a bed, he pointed out. Just for a change.
His eyes were serious, but his head came down, catching my lips again, before I had to answer that, and the mounting rhythm resumed, and damn, it was even better this time. Slow and sweet and hot and yeah. Might have been wrong about that whole climax thing, because the shuddering was getting harder and the fireworks were getting brighter, and I was biting my lip to keep from crying out at every passionate thrust, and yeah, oh yeah, right there, right there. The door banged open and someone came in carrying a tray of something I couldn't see because I was looking at it from below, and because the fireworks were in the way.
Hey, sorry it took so long. The meeting went okay, but I had to go down the street for
Chapter 24.
Well, how was I supposed to know?
Ray said, settling into one of the seats behind us and handing me some more napkins.
You ought to put a sign on the door. If the balcony's rockin', don't come a-knockin'.
This isn't a hotel,
Luis Cesar grated out. The mess was cleaned up, and the pullover was back in place, but the hair was still a tousled mess. I grinned at it, and then reached over and tousled it some more. He caught my sticky with cola wrist and placed a kiss on it. Ray snorted.
That's my point. There's hotels all over the city. You two need to get a room after the show, all right?
"When's the meeting?" I asked, deciding that I was as clean as I was going to get, despite the fact that the cola had made the jumpsuit cling in all the wrong places. I gave up dabbing at myself with dry napkins and stole some of his bugles.
"Intermission. Curly said he's got some stuff to do, but'll meet us for drinks."
"Curly?"
"The theater owner. His real name's Meredith, 'cause I guess his parents hated him. But he goes by Curly, even though he don't have too many anymore."
He sat forward.
"This ought to be good."
"What ought to be good?" I asked, because they still hadn't raised the curtain. And then, almost as if they'd heard me, they did, pulling it not up but across in one huge swish of red velvet. And I just sat there, a bugle about to fall out of my suddenly slack mouth, because that wasn't a stage.
"Okay, oh boy, okay," Ray said, as I took in the sight of a wall of water.
It spread over the entire area where the stage should have been, with the bottom disappearing behind the orchestra pit, and giving the impression that it went down a lot farther. With the top and sides hidden by the framework of curtains, it looked like a whole reef had somehow been transported into the theater. It must have contained millions of gallons. It was huge. Yet that wasn't the weirdest thing about it. I stared at the setup, which looked like nothing so much as a kid's first aquarium, complete with a bunch of fake-looking plants, some colorful coral, a turreted backless castle perched on a rocky outcropping, and some bubbles. But that wasn't the weirdest thing either.
"Those? What are those?" Luis Cesar whispered, sitting forward in his seat.
I didn't answer. I thought it was kind of obvious.
"Huh? Huh?"
Ray elbowed me as something swirled up out of the darkness.
"We're gonna be freaking rich."
"Yeah," I thought blankly. "Yeah." The music reached a crescendo, although it was almost drowned out by the audience, which was on its feet, giving a standing ovation as the cast members arrived, despite the fact that nothing had happened yet. "Sit down," I thought, annoyed that they were holding up the show. Until I realized I was hanging over the side of the box, trying to get a better view, even though I already had what was probably the best in the house, and was suddenly even better when one of the showgirls paused in the water not 12 feet away from my reaching hand. For a moment, we just stared at each other. There was no doubt what she was, but she didn't look anything like the flirty neon cuties on the sign outside. She didn't look like anything I'd ever seen.
"Hey, hey, get back in here. You're gonna fall," Ray said.
I barely heard him. The water was dark, or maybe it was just that the lights were pointed at the castle, where something I didn't care about was going on. But it didn't matter. I didn't need it. She made her own light. Not like other fae I'd seen, who cast light shadows in our world, how thick and how bright, depending on how powerful they were. But like she captured any light that came her way and sent it back in a scintillation of colors. They sparkled off the antenna-like filaments above her eyes, the delicate gills at her neck, and above all, the long, sinuous sweep of iridescent scales beginning just below her waist. They were completely unlike Claire's. Hers had been lustrous, but thick and hard, like battle armor carved out of semi-precious stones. These were soft and supple, a glide of colors rather than a single hue, the way water takes on the shape of the world around it. I honestly couldn't have said what color she was. The tail ended in a spreading, translucent, filmy fin, gossamer fine, like the bluish-gray hair that ghosted out in the water around her. It was long, maybe 2/3 the length of her body, making her look like she was drifting in a cloud. It was beautiful. She was beautiful.
"Dory?"
That was Luis Cesar, because I was up on the side of the box now. It was thick old wood,
perfectly capable of supporting my weight, but he had a hand on my leg anyway, probably because of the 30-foot drop. Or maybe because I was acting crazy again. "Get down," I told myself, but I didn't get down. I wanted to touch her. I needed to.
"Dory!"
His hand tightened on my calf because I'd reached the end of the box and was trying to go farther. But there was no way unless I learned to walk on thin air. I let out a cry of mixed frustration and longing, heard Ray asking Luis Cesar what the hell was wrong with me, didn't have an answer. And then I didn't need one, because part of me was able to close that gap after all. It was the weirdest sensation, like a film was being pulled off me. I could almost see it, extending out beyond my hand, a ripple in my vision, distorting the darkness, and reaching, reaching, reaching. The creature beyond the glass, or whatever it was, seemed to see it too, or to see something, because she was pressed against the surface now, her very human hands spread wide across it, allowing me to see the faint weave of skin in between the fingers. Her eyes, likewise, were so human, but so strange, larger, slanted, crystalline, with that same non-color of the scattering of diamond-hued scales that edged them. She looked almost like a statue carved out of crystal, except that she lived and breathed, the gills on the sides of her neck fluttering excitedly because almost, almost...
Dory!
Luis Cesar pulled me back, right before I would have taken a headfirst plunge into darkness, but he didn't get all of me. Something went careening out into the theater, flowing over the heads of an audience who never noticed, if they even could have, being too intent on the assault on the castle that some of the creatures were pantomiming. And then came curving back, through air and glass both, into dark water and luminous crystal eyes. "Tell me." And she did. Darting out into the lobby, pushing through a ward over the stairs that crackled and hissed, going down, 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 two stories, three, five. Out into a hallway with three doors, two normal ones on either side, and a metal submarine type straight ahead. Some security guards in an office, through the door to the left, watching a row of TV monitors.
"What the hell's she doing?"
one demanded. Another man leaning over his shoulder.
"Dunno. Fucking vampires. I think she's a Domphir." "Same thing. They're all crazy."
He made an annoyed sound.
"Better call the boss."
Getting tired. Couldn't hold free flight much longer. Luckily, two guards were leaving the office. I grabbed one lightly, just enough contact to steady me. Then we went through the metal door and into a corridor that looked like it was literally on a submarine. There was a narrow strip down the middle of rubberized flooring and large portholes on either side, looking out onto a huge holding tank.
"I don't like it in here. It's creepy,"
my guard said. He was younger than the other, tall and thin with an obvious Adam's apple that kept bobbing up and down. And then stopped. Arrested, like his breath, at a flash of iridescent green outside one of the portholes. It was gone in an instant, before I had time to more than glimpse it. Then it reappeared on the other side, hesitating long enough for the young guard to notice, along with a glimpse of yellow alien eyes. He stumbled back, swallowing a cry, and the other guard grinned.
"It looks like Fairfax likes you."
"Fairfax?"
"One of the girls in the office named him. Means beautiful hair or some shit."
He shook his head.
"Women."
"Women," the younger guard agreed, and laughed nervously. And then screamed and jumped back when something slammed into the metal wall right beside him.
"Relax, kid. He does that all the time. It's why they don't let him upstairs no more. Wouldn't keep on script. Just kept ramming the ward like he was trying to take it down."
The older guard grinned evilly.
"Or maybe eat the audience."
The younger man didn't look like he thought that was funny.
"Could he do that?" he asked, staring around. "Nah,
redundant system. Got a control upstairs as well as down. You're safe enough.
The older guard started working to get the door at the end of the hallway open, while the younger continued to stare around. But Fairfax was nowhere to be seen. After a moment, my guard visibly relaxed. Until strange sounds started emanating from portholes up and down the corridor, making him jump. They were impossible to describe in any human tongue, because they weren't made by a human tongue. Just strange underwater sounds, loud and disorienting, causing the young guard to reach for weapons he couldn't use.
"Would you calm the hell down?"
the other guard demanded.
"Would you hurry up? I didn't sign on for this."
"You signed on for exactly this. And stop letting him get to you. It'll only encourage him, and he's bad enough as it is. Beyond the pile already, if he wasn't such a good breed. Ah, here we go."
The door gave way, and we were through, into a medium-sized, dimly lit room with curved sides, one of which was made almost entirely out of glass, or perhaps a transparent ward, considering what the pressure had to be down here. The other walls were piled high with wooden crates, to the ceiling in some cases, along with something on a table, desiccated and dry. A few brown, curled-up bits like withered leaves floated to the floor from the disturbance of our entry. And then Fairfax reappeared out of the murky depths to throw himself at the ward, battering it with his body so furiously that even the older guard flinched.
"See? I told you so."
That was a short, overweight man with shirt sleeves rolled up and sweat on his brow. I thought he might be the Curly my twin's friend had mentioned. He was bald, but had a rim of little blonde curls around his head that flipped up instead of down, making him look like he was wearing a hat without the hat. There was another person with him, a man, judging by the height, but I couldn't see him well. They were standing directly under a recessed light, which gilded Curly's brim of golden curls and danced in his blue eyes, yet the shadows gathered around the other man so thickly that the light couldn't penetrate. A mage, then, cloaking himself for some reason I didn't understand. Surely everyone knew him here? Curly, if that was who the other man was, certainly seemed to, and was vibrating with irritation.
"You can't just come in here and do things like this," he snapped. "I know how they are, and how to handle them. You don't." "It's working so far."
The other man's voice matched his appearance, low with a deliberate rasp that hid its true inflection.
"Does that look like it's working?"
Curly demanded, pointing at Fairfax. The powerful tail was churning up the water, the humanoid torso was beating at the barrier with both hands, and the strange alien eyes were staring, 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 but not at any of us, but at the girl. Because that was what was on the table, I realized. Not a clump of brown, shriveled-up seaweed, as I'd first thought, but a child. A tiny thing, shorter than the table she lay on. And almost completely unlike the beautiful creature upstairs, who was suddenly animated too. I could see her dimly through my twin's eyes, as well as the scene she was feeding us through the link. It was her child, and she was deathly afraid, her child, and they planned to— I flinched, and almost lost my hold on the guard, pain searing through me as it did the female and Fairfax, the child's father. They were punishing him for leading a revolt, for encouraging the others to refuse to play out the pantomime set for them until their children were freed. Instead, he was watching his own child wither in air breathable for his people, but in dryness that was toxic over time. The delicate membranes that made up their bodies could not afford to dry out. It would kill her. It was killing her.
"You're too soft with them,"
the other man said, and looked at the older guard.
"Show him what defiance costs."
The man hurried to the wall and slammed his fist down on a button. A high-pitched sound resonated through the room, barely audible to the guard I was riding, but Fairfax screamed, an almost human sound, and writhed in apparent agony on the other side of the ward.
"I said cut it out," Curly snapped, and knocked the guard's hand away. "You don't take orders from him."
The guard just stood there, looking nonplussed.
"What are you two doing in here anyway?"
Curly demanded.
There's a problem with the show."
The older guard clicked his fingers at the younger one, who walked over and handed a tablet to Curly. It showed the security feed of my twin, along with the entire cast, every one of whom was now clustered on her side of the stage, the murmuring audience forgotten. I watched the scene through the guard's eyes, and then through my twin's, who was staring into the desperate, pleading face of the mother. She couldn't understand her, I realized. There was a connection, but she didn't know what to do with it. She knew the creatures wanted something, could feel it like a palpable thing, but she didn't speak their language. She didn't realize. She didn't need to. I sent the mother images, the room with the watery window, Fairfax thrashing frantically against the glass, the girl on the table, shrunken and brown, and then emotions, which are the same in any language. Despair, need, hope, question. The mother didn't nod. That gesture didn't exist in her culture. But her hands were suddenly scrambling against the barrier, clawing at it as if she were trying to break through. Images flashed across my mind. Girl, she showed me. Water, she showed me. Swim. I tamped down my frustration. Yes, we needed to get her to water, but how?
What the hell? What's she doing?
Curly asked, staring at the tablet. The older guard shrugged.
You know vampires. They're all crazy. Give it to me,
the taller man said, coming closer. I still couldn't see him well, but there was something familiar about the voice. Something not from my mind, but from my twins. Something I couldn't place because he was yelling.
The Bessarab girl! You fool!
I quickly sent the creature an image of the ward over the tank, strong and thick. It hadn't so much as wavered under Fairfax's relentless attack, and the avatar I was riding was human. Even assuming he was a mage, and that I could force an assault, he didn't have the power to break through. Wards like that were made to withstand a prolonged siege by numerous mages, and I could ride but one at a time. How? I showed her an image of the wall breaking over and over. How? I felt the question fly through the link, saw the female's excitement when she finally understood, heard the answer forming in her mind. The tablet hit Curly on his bald head, sending him staggering back. The older guard just stood there, looking back and forth between the two men, obviously not sure what to do, and then not having to worry about it when the taller man grabbed him.
Kill her! What?
Curly grabbed the guard, too, before the man could move and whirled on his partner.
Are you crazy? She's a danger. So is killing a senator under my roof. You have any idea how much hell that would rain down on me? And I need her.
She's on the task force designed to shut you down.
So is Geminis. And she's willing to deal. I have it on good authority.
She lied. I've dealt with this bitch before.
He turned to the guard.
Kill her. Take everyone you have. Remember who pays your salary, Curly snapped.
If you need protection, you come to me,
the taller man said, bending over Curly menacingly.
We have a deal.
No.
The little fat man had clearly had enough.
I had a deal with Geminis. One I stupidly agreed to continue with that albino bastard because he said he was in charge after the big guy's death. But he kept screwing with the deal. And now you! Who the hell are you?
The one in charge.
Not here. This is my place. And I don't need you anymore. I made a deal for a new protector and one better connected than you. I don't need any...
The tall man's arm moved, as quick as a vampire's. And the next second Curly was hitting the wall on the other side of the room, unconscious or worse.
The guards just stood there, their eyes huge.
I said, kill her,
the man hissed,
or you're next.
They ran. Chapter 25. I woke up to find myself in Olga's box, wrestling a Mormon for his bicycle. I wrenched the thing away from a pleasant-looking older man with a kindly, concerned face and angry little troll eyes that glittered at me from behind the mask, then swung it toward the stage like a puppet on a string, with no intention of doing any such thing. But I couldn't seem to control my actions, like I couldn't seem to see properly. The theater slurred along with me, a wash of brilliant reds, gleaming golds, and glittering jewel tones from the women's clothes, interspersed with more somber smears of the men's. Somber smears that were suddenly running for the exits, climbing over people and elbowing others out of the way, chivalry be damned, because spellfire and gunfire had just erupted from below. People started screaming, which didn't help my head, and neither did the bullets strafing the box. Everyone ducked, including me, although I hadn't told myself to do so. But I hit the floor anyway, cursing silently because I also couldn't seem to speak. Dorina, I thought furiously. What are you doing? No response. Give me my body back. The lack of response thing continued, and I remained flopped on the ground, unable to move. But I could hear. People screaming, glass shattering, bullets firing in the distance, or striking like hammer blows against the wooden front of the box. And I could smell spilled alcohol from someone's glass, acrid gunpowder as the trolls began firing back, and buttery popcorn that had been trampled underfoot. I could even see a little better, down in the gloom, and realized that my eyesight problems were from double vision. I was seeing both here in the box and wherever Dorina was, some dim room with strange underwater light crawling up the walls. That other room kept throwing shadows over this one, distorting it, but it couldn't cast shadows on the dark. And then somebody shot out a sconce by the door, which made things even better. Enough that I could see Olga's jewelry jump off her neck and onto a guard's face, like something out of Alien, sending him staggering back. Into a dozen more headed through the door. Curly's boys were mages, and a few even seemed to be pretty good ones, but the Fae have a partial resistance to human magic, and the guards didn't look like their hearts were in the fight, especially after a few Hulk smashes around the box by some of the larger trolls. Had it been just them, they'd have run in seconds. But it wasn't just them.
The fuck?
Ray yelled, as a vampire leapt over the front of his box and tried to wrench his head off. He and his attacker disappeared from view, hidden by the wall that separated the two boxes, but only for a moment. A mage was getting choked out on this side and started wildly throwing spells. One set the curtains on fire. Another hit a couple vampires that had been leaping for us from the theater floor, sending them flipping backward into darkness, and a third slammed through the partition, obliterating most of it. That left Luis Cesar staring at me through the burning wreckage, a vampire under each arm and his hair alight.
You're on fire!
I yelled, because vamps had the flammability of kerosene-soaked rags. And then I realized that I had just said that aloud. I jumped back to my feet, staring around in confusion, because I was suddenly back in charge of my body and I didn't know why. Then I noticed. Those few vamps had been merely the vanguard of a legion. They were leaping up from the floor of the theater, despite the fact that we were two stories high, and crawling over the fronts of the boxes like humanoid spiders, dozens of them. The first group had mostly avoided our box because of the crazed mage, but he had gotten thrown over the side, and now they had a clear field. And even trolls couldn't fight with no blood in their bodies. As several demonstrated almost before I had finished the thought, huge living boulders suddenly falling to their knees. And to drain a fae that fast, we weren't talking rank and file here. We were talking...
Masters!
Ray screamed. Shit.
The only good thing was that the destroyed wall had left a mass of flaming bits lying around, shards and splinters of old hardwood still burning merrily, including on a sheet of paneling directly in front of me, and then in the air after I picked it up and flung it with everything I had at the approaching lineup. The weight of the slab knocked several of them off the box, the burning shrapnel set more alight, and one piece caught a guy straight through the heart. He wouldn't die. His head was intact, but he was out for the count. Unlike several others, including one blonde-haired master who I danced with all across the box, weaving in and out of the battle going on inside and stabbing him three different times while he tried to drain me. But you need line of sight for that, and I kept dodging behind trolls. I finally saw an opening, slashed hard across his throat, then stabbed directly downward. I was using a wooden shard, not a knife, so that should have been it. But he dodged at the last second, so the blow missed the heart. And then, with an elegant somersault backward into the darkness, he was gone. I leaned over the edge of the box, panting and light-headed, with a snarl on my lips, because I don't let prey walk away. But he was nowhere to be seen. But something else was. I realized I was wreathed in a faint yellowish-green glow spreading out from where the master had just been.
"Geminis family aura," Luis Cesar confirmed, before I could ask.
I was still getting used to seeing auras, the power signatures all vamps gave off that told their family histories at a glance. They'd been invisible before the wall fell in my head, because the skill for seeing them was on Dorina's side of the brain. But now I could. And this one made no sense at all.
"Why?" Luis Cesar asked. Geminis' family was huge. The Senate thought they killed all of his masters who were involved with the smuggling trade, but it's reasonable that they missed a few.
This isn't a few, and Curly just said... But I didn't have time to go into what Curly had said, because the next wave was about to hit, with mages as well as vamps, and these didn't look like the pansy-ass guards. The mages couldn't jump two stories like the vamps, but that didn't seem to be slowing them down any. They threw glimmering strands of magic at the top of Luis Cesar's box, where they clung like Spidey's web, and acted like it too. A ripple of white light tore through them. They abruptly tightened, and the mages went flying through the air like they were riding huge rubber bands, allowing them to hit Luis Cesar with half a dozen spells all at once. I felt my heart stop, because even a master could go down under something like that. But the spells didn't seem to work. They hit, but he didn't so much as flinch, and nothing happened. Except that the wounds he had been healing suddenly started seeping again. That included a large gash across his stomach that he'd closed so fast it hadn't even had time to stain his shirt. It was staining it now, in a bright red flood that made my heart clench even before I started to run, and found that my legs had other ideas. "No, damn it, let me go!" But Dorina didn't listen. Instead, she threw me back at the wall where the bicycle was propped up on its little kickstand, the shiny blue and silver paint job reflecting the fighting and the fire and my desperate face. Because anti-healing spells were a bitch. They'd make a human bleed like a hemophiliac until he bled out, and even for a vamp they could be deadly. They wouldn't kill you themselves, but they'd slow your healing down enough that an obliging enemy could do it for them. I didn't know how badly they'd affect a first-level master, but it was safe to say that the field had just gotten a lot more level. But I couldn't do anything about it because I was busy playing with the damned bike. My hands moved expertly over it without any input from me, while Luis Cesar began ripping chairs from the floor and throwing them and everything else he could find at the mages. It seemed to be working. Half of them were knocked over the side, with several getting tangled in their own safety nets, like butterflies trapped in cocoons. And the rest couldn't seem to dodge and also concentrate well enough to throw a spell. But it left him unable to help Ray, who looked like he needed it. A high-level master was holding Ray's hands immobilized over his head with one of his own. He had forced the smaller vamp to his knees with a little smirk, but hadn't thought to turn him around.
probably assuming that Ray was too weak to bother with such precautions, because most guys at his level would have been. Ray wasn't most guys. He didn't bother trying to break the hold, which probably wouldn't have worked anyway. He just popped some fang and went straight for something below the guy's belt. And a vamp's bite is kind of like a crocodile's. Getting one to release when he doesn't want to is no freaking joke. Which probably explains why the guy turned purple and threw up, and why Ray was able to break his hold, rip his throat open, and then flip him over the balcony. He saw me looking and spread his hands. Huh? Huh? I didn't say anything because I couldn't, and because somebody on this side was trying to stab me in the eye, only to find something suddenly sticking out of his own. The mage fell over, a shocked look on what was left of his face, and I stared upward, at Olga, wrenching a long, skinny blade out of his head, in order to whirl around and slash it through the belly of someone else. Red splattered, and she roared, standing over me with a bloodied sword like a modern-day Boudicca. The sound was echoed by the trolls still in the box, and the ones in the corridor outside, where a major battle had broken out. And then everybody went running for the door because our box was temporarily clear. Everybody except me. I looked down to see that the bike's wheels and handlebars had been taken off, along with various other bits. But the strangely thick centerpiece was still there, now a fat tube bigger than any bike could possibly need for support, and with a little scope that popped up from the base. Shit! I tried to cry out, to tell someone that something very bad was about to happen, but my tongue refused to form the words. And even if it hadn't, I doubted I'd have been heard over the screaming, which had reached highest hill on the roller coaster levels, and the continued gunfire, and the bam-bam crunch of a troll smacking somebody against the floor and walls and possibly ceiling outside. Meanwhile, I was getting back to my feet and moving to a central position in the box, and resting the no-longer bicycle on my shoulder, aiming for the bright gold crest over top of the stage, and screaming in my head, because I still didn't know why. "Redundant system. Got a control upstairs as well as down," echoed in my thoughts. Shit, shit, shit. The only good thing was that the former bicycle was damned hard to steady, with the whole theater now in mass exodus mode, with enough pounding feet below to shake the box up above. Or maybe that was the shaft of orange light that suddenly speared upward, shattering the boards in front of me and throwing me back against the wall, along with the remaining chairs, the mountain of debris, and the cute baby chandelier that had been glittering overhead, and was now in pieces raining down everywhere. I wasn't in pieces, but I hit hard. Hard enough to force all the breath out of my lungs and to leave me gasping like a beached fish. Hard enough to ruin Radu's couture with wooden splinters, some as big as knitting needles, suddenly sticking out of it. Almost hard enough to knock the bazooka from my suddenly numb hands. Almost. I snarled and lurched back to my feet and swung the RPG launcher up at the same time. Luis Cesar was moving three more vamps off the balcony and elbowing a mage in the face without even turning around, because he was looking at me. He opened his mouth to say something, probably to ask, "What the hell?" Which, yeah. "Let me know when you find out," I thought. But then he caught something out of the corner of his eye and his expression changed. "Get down!" he yelled. "Get!" What looked like a bunch of 50-caliber rounds cut him off, strafing us from a box on the other side of the theater. They ripped through the old hardwood like it was nothing, tore through the shoulder of a troll in the doorway, sending him staggering back into the hall, and would have torn through me, except that Luis Cesar had just leapt from the neighboring box, taking a whole line of tank-killing rounds while knocking me out of the way. I hit the floor with him on top, the once perfect body a mangled piece of red flesh and white bone, and I tried to scream, horror washing over me along with his blood, but my voice wasn't under my control any more than my body. My head was already turning back toward the stage, my hands were pulling the bloody weapon out from under him, and my eyes were fixing back on target. "What are you doing?" I yelled at Darina.
What the fuck?
That. I felt my lips form the word, but nobody heard, including me, because I had just fired a rocket launcher and didn't have hearing protection. The resulting sound was so loud that for a second, everything went absolutely quiet and almost still. I could see blood droplets, flaming splinters, and a lone crystal from the chandelier thrown back into space by the impact of the bullets lazily turning. I could feel the sparks that edged the shell as it blasted out of the end of the weapon, glittering brightly in the room. I could trace the thin trail of smoke as it tore across the room. Just as a magical grenade was palmed and primed and thrown downstairs, all in one swift gesture by another pair of hands. Two explosions ripped across my vision. Two redundant systems failed simultaneously. And the beautiful crystalline creatures dove as one, so fast that I barely saw them move before they were gone. Down, down, down to a flooding room lit by a spiral of light, where a portal's maw had opened, spearing bright yellow beams through the floating debris. I watched them through Dorina's eyes as they poured through the portal, moving like quicksilver, visible only because of the silhouettes they cast against the light. And they weren't the only things. The huge tank was emptying after them, its contents falling down the portal's maw like water down a drain. Along with the body of the older guard, the floating crates, and the now empty table, just a square of darkness against the portal's light before it was swept away on a rushing tide of water. But not enough of it. Because it wasn't just the wards below that had been taken out. I stared through drifting smoke at the great energy field over the stage, which a second ago had been hard as a rock and slick as glass, and which was now bucking and bowing and shimmering and... "Get back!" I yelled, uselessly. Because the next second, the ward shuddered and shook and broke, loosing the entire wall of water to come crashing down all at once. And it looked like it had gone up higher than the curtains as well as deeper, because the heavy red velvet pieces went shooting off into the flood, ripped away by the force of the tsunami that had just been unleashed right on top of us. The wave slammed over the balcony, but I couldn't hear it. Couldn't hear anything but the echo of the gun blending with the roar of the water until everything was sound, like everything was suddenly cold and dark and liquid. Well, almost everything. Because Dorina's hold over me had shattered along with the explosions. And as soon as it did, I dove for the floor and Luis Cesar, grabbing him right before the water hit and clinging as we were swept over the balcony and out into the room, falling half in water and half in air before hitting the floor the same way. Then the rest of the wave came down and tried to drown us. I grabbed the only thing I could reach, a flat piece of wood that might have been flooring because it wasn't 3 inches thick, and held on. The great wave sloshed forward and then back, preparing for another surge this way, and I shoved Luis Cesar onto the slab and braced over top of him. It was almost the same position I'd occupied earlier, under very different circumstances. And then we were thrown forward again, the current propelling us and a dozen other stragglers up the incline, through the theater doors and across the ruined lobby, where some ended up slammed into the wall, but not us. Luis Cesar and I went shooting forward, straight out the front doors and into the street, on a swell big enough to surf on, which was practically what we were doing. Until I looked up and saw a big white delivery truck and... Chapter 26.
Ugh!
I screamed and sat up, staring around wildly, at a darkened room. My room, I realized, recognizing the mural on the far wall, splashed with moonlight. And my bed, where I was lying next to... There were running feet, a door crashing open, and a light flicking on, but I barely noticed, because Luis Cesar was beside me, and he was all right. He was all right. Only he wasn't. He was out cold, in a healing trance, the kind vamps fall into when they need all their strength focused on repairing catastrophic damage. Damage I could still see in ridges and ripples of flesh, healed over but not yet smoothed out, what seemed like everywhere.
There was a huge indentation over his heart, with new pink skin puckered and drawn around it. Another where his belly button should have been, except that it had been carved anew by hot metal, embedded pieces of which still ring the crater the bullet had left. I pushed back the duvet and found a third wound in his thigh, angry and red and seeping into the bandage I pulled away. It looked like a shark had taken a bite out of him. There were other wounds, too, smaller but still visible, because a vampire's body isn't like a human's. It prioritizes healing, putting the most dangerous wounds first. So the little lesions, which should have been closed in an instant, hadn't been, because he'd needed, because he'd almost, because...
Dory!
There were other people here now, and he was naked. I should have been covering him back up, but I wasn't. I was pulling him into my arms, crying and making sounds that weren't screams, but weren't not screams either. And staring at the wall, my wall, which should have been comforting but wasn't, because one of those shots had taken his heart. It had taken his heart, and if another had torn through his neck, or if a piece of shrapnel had...
Dory! Dory! Take this!
Someone was saying, and trying to give me a cup of some hideous-smelling concoction. I didn't take it. I held on instead, rocking him slightly, I didn't know why. Maybe to comfort him, although he didn't know it. Maybe to comfort me. While a litany of no, no, no rang in my head, and may have come out of my mouth, but I couldn't tell, didn't care. Because he wouldn't have suffered all that except for me. Because he could have dodged any of those things but for me, because he deliberately... And I couldn't, I wouldn't...
Dory!
Someone snapped their fingers in front of my face, loud enough to make me blink. It was Olga. I looked up to see her bending over the two of us, her hair in a mess. She had on a baby blue robe over a floral nightgown. I don't know why I noticed that. She took my head between her hands, giant, strong, strangely comforting hands, and looked into my eyes.
He survive. You survive. It over.
But she was wrong. It wasn't over. I'd almost gotten him killed, and it wasn't over at all. Olga, can you? That was Claire, passing her the horrible brew, which Olga fed me like I was a baby. It tasted as awful as it smelled, and it was a complete waste of time because it didn't do a damned... The next time I woke up, the sun was shining through the curtains, and Luis Cesar was gone. For a moment, I just stared at the indentation in the mattress, at sheets that still held the scent of his body, at faint traces of blood on the duvet. And then I was up and running for the door and bursting out into the hall, where Gessa was playing with the boys on the sunny boards of the landing. I stared at them. There were blankets and toys and a large pinkish bear that had now lost both ears, but otherwise seemed to be holding up. It was regarding me quizzically, like everyone else. I swallowed and just stood there, swaying for a moment.
Where? He fine,
Gessa told me.
He go talk to Senate. He said tell you.
I swallowed again. Okay. Stinky came over and offered me a cookie. It was half-eaten, and the rest was seriously slobbered on. He was badly in need of braces. If his adult teeth ever finished coming in, and he drooled a lot. Thanks, I'm okay, I told him, and went back into the bedroom. I was not okay. I looked down to see that my hands were shaking, which was absurd. I sat down on the bed, but all I could see were blood-stained sheets. All I could hear was the sound of those bullets hitting flesh, and tearing, and rending, and... My breath started coming faster, and I wondered if this was what a panic attack felt like. I didn't know because I'd never had one. Domfears didn't. Of course, Domfears didn't have friends, or families, or children, or... I got up and went to the bathroom. My face in the mirror looked like a stranger's.
gaunt and dead white except for the burning half-golden tint of my eyes. They looked like my father's when he was calling up power. They looked alien. They looked like hers.